Shalom Aleichem, Chevra, Binyamin Hammer here at the National Council of Young Israel. Happy to welcome everyone back. We are now ready for conference call number 80. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Question one. My shul meets in the Yeshiva Elementary School. The Yeshiva davens at 8 a.m. on Sundays, so the shul has a late minyan at 9 a.m. in addition to a 7 a.m. minyan. There were times when only 8 or 9 people attended the 9 a.m. minyan. Should an attempt be made to ask a few of the bar mitzvah bachrim in the yeshiva to be mishtatef? Or does their potential bittul Torah trump the 9 a.m. minyan's need for a tzibur? It's an excellent question. Ideally, we never promote bittul Torah for tinok or shabbos rabban. We should try very hard to avoid that. What do you do to make a minyan? You have 8 or 9 and the people there, you have to make a minyan. Should have the members of the 7 a.m. minyan, who already finished their minyan and they finished their breakfast and whatever they're doing, get a list of some of those people who could be on call for emergency duty. They can come back to the shul and be the one or two people to make the minyan. And the truth is, ideally, if the 7 a.m. minyan is much bigger, it would be kedai to arrange in advance that one or two of those people should move to the 9 o'clock minyan. That's the preferred way to do it. If those two options are for some reason impossible, you have to speak to the principal of the school. Maybe there are one or two talmidim who have problems sitting for so long. We all know such talmidim exist. And one or two of those people who are not going to be learning that much anyway in their classroom can do a different mitzvah to come and make the minyan. And it'll be better for him and better for the school and better for you. And he can sit in the back of the minyan and with a chumash, learn some chumash and Rashi or whatever, be able to learn at that bar mitzvah age. That would be the next best thing. But of course it's better not to take anybody out of a class of a Torah school. Question two. A congregant is going on a diplomatic mission to Israel with some local politicians. He's one of two Jews and only Shomer Mitzvahs on the trip. Others are all Gentiles. As a part of the trip, the group will be touring various religious sites, Jewish, Muslim, and Christian. He's not sure exactly the trip itinerary yet, what types of buildings, which sects, etc. But he feels that if the group as a whole, including the other Jew, goes to all of the stops and he makes the point of not going into some buildings, it may hurt his relationship with the political leaders, relationships which he has worked on very hard. Is there room for a cooler in this situation, or is this the time to specifically stand up for our beliefs? First of all, it depends on the nature of the diplomatic mission. There can be a diplomatic mission which can lead reasonably to a significant betterment of the attitude of the government in this country to the state of Israel, through those politicians that are coming on the diplomatic mission. If that is true, there's much room to be lenient, because pikuach nefesh, very, very important. We're now suffering so many rockets. We need so much help. We need help from every quarter. And if this mission can in fact achieve an improvement in the attitude of the U.S. government towards the state of Israel, there's room to be lenient. However, many diplomatic missions do not rise to that level. It's a nice gesture. You want to develop relations with the local politicians, but they're not in a position to change U.S. policy. Remember, that's a federal decision. Not every congressman and every place has enough power to attempt these kinds of changes. Still, it's a good idea to those who are so inclined to establish good working relationships with these politicians. I'm not saying no. There could be many local issues that it can be helpful for, and in some broader sense of goodwill, but it does not rise to the level of pikuach nefesh or anything close to it. If that's the case, then we have to keep the halacha as it is. The halacha tells us that one may not enter into a church. A church is clearly a base of avodah zarah. Christianity is avodah zarah from the perspective of the Jewish person, and therefore he may not enter into a sanctuary of a church. Now, going into a different part of the building, which is not a sanctuary, technically speaking, is permitted. We don't allow it under normal conditions, but if there's a good reason to do it, and this is a good reason, it would be allowed. So if it's a church, he may go into the church building. He may not go into the church sanctuary. If they're going to the downstairs or the side, that's okay, but to go in would not be okay. This is a significant violation, to go into a base of Avodah Zarah. This is found in Shut Yabia Omer, where he, in Chelik Beis, Simon Yud Aleph, he says, even because of Darkei Shalom, in Yoredeya Chelik, can't do it. As far as a mosque is concerned, Rabbi Avadah does an about face, in Chelik Zion, in Yoredeya Simon Yud Beis, he says, look, a mosque is not a base of Avodah Zarah, because the Muslims don't believe only in one God. They don't believe in Jesus. They believe in one God. And the one God is our God. They also believe in a false prophet called Muhammad. But it's not Avodah Zarah. It quotes no less an authority than Rabbi Yitzchak HaChanan and Shuvas En Yitzchak, or Chaim Simon Yud Aleph, who says so. Others disagree. And therefore, we should try our best not to go into a mosque. Rabbi Avadah's proof from Maris HaMachpelah is less than convincing. We were there before them. But one should stay away if it's at all possible. However, if there's a need for the diplomatic mission to go into a mosque, it would be permissible according to Rabbi Avadah, and B'Shas HaTzach, we can rely on the P'sak. But again, if it's not important, it's better to be avoided. Question 3. May one switch seats during a ball game because Zenen of Zelo Chosar. So, a very distinguished Rav, Rabbi Chaim Jachter, wrote an article about this in the TABC publication called Kol Torah in the year Tovshin Ayin Aleph, 9 years ago. And I recommend you look there. I'll just summarize what he says. It is true that Zenen Evezelo Chosar is potter. You don't have to pay. The Sugim Esechta Babakama on Daf Chof. That is true. However, it's very likely that's only true after the fact. Somebody went into someone else's house and he had some benefit and the person had no loss. So then, when we pass the halacha, he need not pay the homeowner for the benefit that he received. That is certainly true. But may trespass and go into the house l'chatchila from the beginning. May he do that or may he not do that? That's a matter of dispute. It's true, there's one opinion in the Mordechai that even that's okay. And the explanation given is it's called Kofin Amidas Sodom. That is this week's Parsha, the Parsha of Sodom. So we say that you force somebody, he's not losing anyway, let somebody else have benefit. Because Midas Sodom, Shalish, Shalish, Shalach, Shalach, which is a bad Midah, we learn the Pirkei Avos. That is certainly one opinion. However, the opinion of Tosfos on that daf, the Masechta Bava Kama, is different. And Tosfos says that although it's true that you need not pay, but the homeowner has a right to say you're not permitted to come. You're not permitted to come. I don't let you in. Zenen Evezelo Chosar. Or whatever, I have my reasons. I refuse to let you in. And therefore, this opinion is quoted by the Ramah in Siman in Choshen Mishpat, Shin Samer Gimel Sif Vav. There is, however, a complexity. The Ramah limits his case to a situation in which the homeowner has the ability to rent it out for money, just decides not to do so. He wants to just leave it the way it is. However, the language of the Ramah implies that if he has no ability to make a profit by renting it out, then he's not able to prevent someone else from coming in. If that is correct, then you go to a ball game, and the ball game is already a few innings in, and it's clear there are thousands of empty seats in the lower section. You're in the higher section. Those thousands of seats are not going to be sold by the ballpark anymore. Therefore, they cannot make a profit on it. So according to that view, which is a simple read of the Ramah, there would not be a violation of theft, of gzeila. However, the Pischei Tshuva there in Tzivkot and Gimel says, well, it seems from others that even though he cannot rent it out at this point in time, still the owner has the right to say, don't come in, even if it is for no apparent reason. So therefore, though there are two leniencies over here, one, if you look in the Mordechai, he seems to say that you can always use the property over the objection of the homeowner because Kofan Amidah Stone, right now it's not being rented. Two, the Ramah even implies that if he cannot rent it, that you may use it over his objection. But the consensus view, as the Pischei Tshuva Tzivkot Gimel expresses it, is against both of those views. It says, no, even if it's not available to be profited from right now, still he has a right to object, even if he has no reason. And that seems to be the consensus view, for which reason if the ballpark objects to this, you may not switch seats. Furthermore, Rabbi Jachta points out correctly, Midas Tomas, you lose nothing. But here you can lose something. You're not going to lose money from further ticket purchasing, that's for sure. There's a third inning, no one's coming after that. But there is a reason to keep people in their seats. Otherwise, people are going here and there and causing turmoil. It's not good for business. People want to come to a stadium and sit down and not have people running up and down. So therefore, it's to the detriment of the stadium. Furthermore, the concept of Kofan Amidah Stone seems to be limited to where it's important for the individual to gain this hana. He's homeless, nowhere to live. So Zenenev is Alokhas, a place to live. But it's certainly arguable that switching a seat from the higher level to the lower level of a stadium is far from a critical tzorech as having a place to live. Beyond that, the stadium owner is likely not from Bnei Yisrael, and therefore, even if we'll say that Kofan Amidah Stone applies to Bnei Yisrael, or Sisa Yoshev Atov, it's likely it does not apply to Bnei Noach, which throws another monkey wrench in over here. And finally, perhaps most importantly, is the potential problem of Chilul Hashem. If it's not being done by others and you do it, it's Chilul Hashem. Now, if everybody is doing it, which is something which is being done by the masses, it's arguable that after you see all the masses doing it, that someone who is a Shomer Mitzvah can do it as well for a variety of reasons. One, it would not be a Chilul Hashem if others are doing it en masse. Number two, whatever lack of order pre-exists, the Shomer Mitzvah's descent to a lower level. Three, and perhaps most importantly, if the masses are doing it, it's very likely that the ballpark owners are moichel. Because if they wanted to stop it, they have ways to stop it. They put in ushers, show me a ticket, and kick him back upstairs. if it's being done by many, many people, so then there are these three reasons. And there's also those two shittos we mentioned earlier that will allow it in any event. So in that kind of a case, there's more room for leniency. But that you should walk down yourself to take advantage of these seats on the lower level, that should not be done. Question 4. If a woman in labor sees down less than a gris, does she become a nida? The short answer is no, because we know that a kesem, less than the size of a gris, does not make a woman a nida. And even though she's in labor, if it's early labor, as we shall see soon, it's not a problem. Question 5. Standard procedure of a woman in labor. At what point does she become a nida? That's an excellent question. That's A. B. Does the doctor checking for dilation constitute psichas akev, which itself may make her a nida? That's B. Let's talk about A first. Well, we have a rule that any blood that a woman sees in labor is likely making her a nida. It's called dam yoledes, right? Kimei nidas devosa titma. He says Riva Yolda. So dam yoledes is the same halachic status as anida, as the pasuk itself says in Parshas Tazria at the very beginning. And therefore, if she sees blood, either blood which is on a surface, which is halachically prohibited, technically, which means it's the size of a gris, which is about a penny, and it's on a white surface, and it's bikavul tuma, which could easily happen. White sheets are all over the place. Then she's a nida automatically. Furthermore, she sees we'll call it a gush of blood, a shefadam, a flow, that would render her nida even if the criteria of kesem are not met. So when she sees dam, she's considered to be a nida. Again, assuming the dam is from the placenta, from the uterus, the dam would make her into a nida. The Gemara in Masechta Shabbos has three different times when it's considered to be psichas hakever, which makes her into a cholish yesh basakana, which also makes her into a nida b'pshuto. Aside from seeing blood, is also what's called Yosheves al HaMashber, which means they tell her to push, the very late stage of labor, or if she can no longer walk and her friends have to carry her in a stretcher. That's another criterion found in Masechta Shabbos. And if either of those are met, they would also make her considered to be a nida l'halacha, even in the absence of blood. On the other hand, there are other parts of the labor process which are controversial. For example, when the water breaks. So there's some who say that itself makes her into nida. In my opinion, and many poskim agree, does not make her into a nida when the water breaks. Does not. Then is what's called the stripping of the membranes. That all depends on how they do it. Generally speaking, the rule is blood from the uterus makes her a nida. Blood from the outside does not make her a nida, and the stripping can be either way. Sometimes there's a streak of blood from the mucus plug. That's considered to be outside the uterus, and therefore that would not make her into a nida. Much more to be said, but those are the highlights. Question B, doctor checking for dilation constitutes psichas hakever. So number one is a big dispute. Psichas hakever mi bachutz, from the outside. Clears this from the outside. Some say it's a problem, and many others say it's not a problem. That's number one. Number two, how wide must the psicha be? According to Rav Moshe Feinstein's psak, which others dispute, it's very unlikely for the doctor's examination to make her into a nida, because the psicha is not wide enough. And that there may argue with Rav Moshe, but that's Rav Moshe's psak. And if you have a kind of a sfek sfeka, maybe from the outside doesn't count, maybe it's not wide enough. So there are those who dispute both points. seems to me we have a right to rely on this sfeika, especially if our time for delivering hasn't come yet. We all know that there can be dilation for a period of time before she goes into significant labor. And that has no halachic consequence. The Dina, even though Rav Moshe seems to say it's also just doesn't believe the doctors, that's a difficult tshuva. So the bottom line is that the doctor's checking likely does not constitute psichas hakever because it's on the outside or it's too narrow. And the standard procedure, so we spoke about earlier, 6, is if a cholish ein bo sakana goes to hospital on Shabbos, may he follow the rove that the nurses are goyim to do malacha for him, or must he ask? I believe he's allowed to follow the rove. We always follow the rove, unless it's an indication that she's Jewish. 7, a woman sees dam 3 times after Yom Lamed. Does she have to keep on the benedness or Yom HaChodesh? It's a matter of great dispute. In my opinion, we can be lenient. If you see 3 times more than 31 days or more, you're not required to keep either of these 2 vestos. It's what we call a negative vestos. A negative vestos for not less than 31 days. That's also a vestos, in my opinion. Not everyone agrees, but I think we can be lenient in these cases. 8. If a baby is born 8 minutes after Shkia, when is the bris? What about 30 seconds after Shkia? Always postpone the bris till the following day. In other words, if it's today's Wednesday, baby's born to Wednesday and Thursday, Ben HaShmosh is even a few seconds after the Shkia, we would postpone the bris till Thursday and not have it on Wednesday. If it were Friday night, you have to postpone it all the way until Sunday. So it's called Ben HaShmoshes. We are Machmir, where we come from, that once the sun sets, it's already possibly Ben HaShmoshes. I know in Hasidic circles, they give you a few extra minutes, or Moshe the Tshuva a few extra minutes. There was a famous case of a big Talmud Chacham who had a child born 2 minutes after Shkia, and he asked all the Rabbanim in New York, and they all said to postpone the bris except for Rav Moshe. He had some kind of sex faker theory. And the bottom line is that they postponed the bris, found the majority of the Rabbanim in our town. Question 9. If a Jewish doctor has a practice with a non-Jewish partner, may they stay open on Shabbos? Only the non-Jew will do the work. Can the Jew have half the schar? An excellent question. I believe that it's permissible to keep the office open. The non-Jewish partner is taking care of sick people, and that's permissible. As far as the profit, I believe that it's permissible again for the following reason. The amount that's charged for every doctor's visit is not purely labor related. You pay X dollars for an hour of the doctor's time, or often more often 10 minutes of the doctor's time. The reason you're paying so much money is because of the overhead. The overhead includes renting the space, the very sophisticated equipment that doctors' offices have. And that's an overhead expense, which has nothing to do with the fact that you came there for 10 minutes on a Shabbos. That's an expense which is you're paying for activities and equipment. It's nothing to do with Shabbos. That's called Havlah. And therefore, I believe it's permissible for the Jewish partner to keep his portion of the medical income from Shabbos as well. 10. When making Kiddush and Shul on Friday night, does it matter if all the children who drink the grape juice are below the age of Chinuch? B. If there are no children I have to drink from the grape juice, is there a minimum or maximum amount an adult can drink? It certainly does matter, because we're not supposed to make a bracha for a child of low igil lechinuch. So therefore you have to have at least one child who is igil lechinuch. Otherwise, you have to drink yourself. How much do you drink? In my view, you should drink the whole cup. Drink the whole cup of grape juice. Why do I say that? The whole cup of grape juice likely has in it a revius, plus what's called malol lugmav. According to many authorities, if you have that much grape juice, which is a revius, which in my humble opinion is 2.5 ounces, and a below lugo, which is approximately half of that. So if you have 4 ounces, you should be in good shape. So the below lugo is the kiddush, and the revius yain is the makom suda, according to the gaonim. And the reason why we normally do not drink the wine in shul, because it's not kiddush makom suda, we don't eat meals in shul anymore as they used to in the old days. But if you can arrange to have it as a kiddush makom suda, at least according to some authorities, such as the gaonim, it'd be worthwhile to drink the whole cup. Almost every whole cup is 4 ounces, which is a combination of below lugmav and revius. If you take the regular shir revius based on the our beitza maksa, the eggs that we have 1.5 times, which is the official shir, and that should do the trick. Question number 11. Avelas on Purim. Family X participates in a Purim suda together with 3 other families for almost 20 years. Baruch Hashem. The meal is wholesome, singing, a bit of dancing, divrei Torah. This year, the wife slash mother is in Yud Beis Kodesh after losing a parent. Can she participate in the suda? Part of it. Should the participants change the suda in any way? No guitar, no dancing, etc. A very good question. The Sefer Divrei Sofrim, Rav Yavrov, has a long and a short. In his short version, it's on page Tav Kuf Yud Ches. He is lenient for the following interesting reason. Many poskim say that any sudas mitzvah, which a person has an obligation to participate in, there are no avelus restrictions. In this case, there was an obligation. On the words in the Megillah, Mishpacha, Mishpacha, Rashi says that families should gather together with other family members to enjoy a suda together. B'chabura, the Barahate of the end of Tafresh Tadehe says, including with Chaverov, who are not his family members. And if it's an obligation to do it, there's no prohibition of Simcha. If you look it up in the originals in Simon Shin Tzadi Aleph, in the Emek Dover, Lamed Dalet. It would be better to have the meal in this woman's house. They usually alternate, you know, different houses every year. So even if it's not her turn, she should volunteer to have it in her house, because there are many more leniencies for a suda simcha in the house of the avel as opposed to out of the house. In our case, we can add the interesting point of Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Gros Moshe. He says that the obligation of Yud Beis Chodesh is based on Kibud Av V'Em. The Gemara tells him Masechta Kiddushin that if a woman is married, Rishus Acherim Aleha, she's supposed to take care of her husband, and therefore she can go to a Simcha with him because he doesn't want to go without her. Not everyone agrees with Rav Moshe for a variety of reasons, but it's at least a sniff. Beyond that, a more significant sniff, there too in the Emek Dover Os Kuf Ayin, the same Siman Shin Sadi Aleph, it's quoted in the Kittur as well, that there are those who maintain that Avelis does not apply in Purim at all. Even in Shiva, Avelis of Shiva, there are those who say it does not apply. For Hesia, Betzina, it's a whole discussion. And there are those who say that the Avelis of 30 days or 12 months does not apply on Purim at all, which is likely the case for any yontif once you pass the Shiva. And therefore, this is another reason why we can be lenient in this question. Number 12. How does one properly make a tradition soup on Shabbos, Iru Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi? Well, I'm told that tradition soups have spices which are never cooked before. In my view, there's no way to make it on Shabbos. Not Rishon, not Irui, not Sheni, not Shlishi, nothing. Because you see, in the original source of the Mordechai is Machmer B'Kli Sheni. And there are those who stop right there. But in the Urayim, which is the source of the Mordechai, he says Kli Shlishi is also Aser. In my view, it depends on what's considered to be a normal use. Whatever's normal use is prohibited. And any leniencies in this regard, because it's not normal. in my estimation, this is the most normal way to make tradition soup. It's always made in, not in Kli Rishon. In Iruah, you're Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi, and therefore I would not make tradition soups at all on Shabbos any which way. Number 13. Is there any prohibition for two people who come to be Menachem Avel to greet one another with words or handshake, etc., in the base Avel? An excellent question again. Aruch HaShulchan in Simen Shin Mem Gimel Siv Dalet says, you know, a base Avel is a Mokom Tzar. It's not appropriate to greet somebody else there based on a Kfar Kotan. Kfar Kotan is based on Masech Tosmochus Paragraph Halacha Vav. And it's found in the Divrei Sofim in Simen Shin Mem Gimel, the Emik Dover Os Chof Vav. And therefore, it's to be discouraged. Now, there are people who do it. I wouldn't stop them from doing it. Not quite the same as a Kfar Kotan, where everyone's in pain. The people could be, you know, somewhat more removed. And therefore, we should limit it. Although it's inappropriate, as for the Aruch HaShulchan, if it has to be done, it's not that bad. It could be done. 14. Is it proper to ask a Kohen or Kohanim to walk out of Shul on Monday or Thursday so that multiple Yisraelim who have Yartzeit can get an Aliyah? Is there a difference whether it's a Monday, Thursday, or a Shabbos? Are there any situations that is appropriate to ask of the Kohanim? If yes, when should the Kohen walk back in? Well, there's a tremendous dispute if you're allowed to ask a Kohen to walk out. Tremendous. If he walks out, by the way, he's not to walk in until the Yisrael who's taking his place actually begins the bracha. Bracha is not enough. You have to actually begin the bracha. But what's his dispute? The best place to look in the Piskei Tshuvos in Simen Kuf Lamed Hei, footnotes 52 and 54, he quotes large numbers of posts come on either side of this question. And even those who say it's allowed, only on very rare occasions. It shouldn't become something which is too commonplace. It should be very, very rare. And some say even then you're not allowed to do it. It seems to me that, strictly speaking, you have no ability, no right to ask them to leave. You shouldn't do it. Once in a while, the Kohen sees what's going on. See, the Gabbai is getting yelled at by two or three Yartzeits, what to do? And the Kohen will leave on his own. Even that should be discouraged. But if he does it for the sake of Shalom, I believe he has a right to do so. After all, he's a descendant of Aaron HaKohen, who is Oyev HaShalom and a Rodev Shalom. Every case is different. Every shul is different. Every Yartzeit is different. And maybe some don't care so much about it. They're willing to be Mevater. We throw a Salat said if someone's Mevater on his Aliyah or on his Kaddish or on a diamond for the Yom, it's a greater Ilu Neshama, make it back, greater Aliyah. It's a greater Aliyah for the Neshama to be Mevata, to take an Aliyah on your Yartzeit. That's what Rabbi Yisrael said. So may those who want that, why should the Kohen walk out if that's the case? You're taking away from the Aliyah's Neshama of the Nifter, because you can be Mevata. So every case is different, and the Rabbonim on the site should be prepared to deal with it appropriately. 15. Is it halachically and ethically permissible to buy an object from a store with a no-questions-asked return policy with the intention to use it for short-term and then return it? B. Is it permissible to take advantage of typos on websites? The company will honor what was written and agreed to, but clearly is not happy as it takes it down from the website as soon as they find out about it. In both these cases, even if it's permissible, it's not a fulfillment of a sisa hayosher of atov to do things which are not only permissible technically but also ethical and upright. This is not upright to take advantage of a typo on a website or to take advantage of a no-questions-asked return policy. I think it really should not be done. It's not yosher. It's not yosher. More than that, chas v'chalim k'kvei achil Hashem was a story. It happened in the mountains. That one of those big chains had a policy of no questions asked returns. So what happened? So, unfortunately, people from our chevra, who was going to spend a month or a few weeks in the mountains, knew about this policy. They went and they cleaned out all the air conditioners. They took them all home. According to the contract, it's fine. They had every intention to give it back after they went back to the city. So, of course, they still had to cancel this policy. For worse than canceling the policy, it smacks of Chilul Hashem. Even though you're taking advantage, you technically speak nothing wrong, we should hold ourselves to a higher standard of Yosher V'Tov, and we should not take advantage of these no-return policies or no questions asked, nor should we take advantage of typos on websites. I think it's not right. 16. Is it permissible for an adult or a child to blow bubbles from the sudsy water and wand on Shabbos? Is it permissible to use liquid or foam soaps on Shabbos? So, again, the word foam soaps is a little bit tricky. Liquid soaps are permissible. Foam soaps, well, it depends. You know, there's a prohibition for Ashkenazim, from the Ramah, to convert a solid into a liquid. My understanding is that the foam soap is not thought of as a full solid, does not end up as a full liquid, and likely the prohibition would not apply. As far as blowing bubbles, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says in Perek Tezayin Sif Lamed Aleph, don't stop children under Bar Mitzvah from blowing bubbles. Why? Because after all, it's very short-lived. The bubble will disappear very, very shortly. And the prohibition here, the potential prohibition of making bubbles like foam, is that most the Rabbanan, since it's very impermanent, and the Rabbanan, there's room to be lenient. We shouldn't stop children from doing it. But he writes, the parent should not encourage it, and certainly should not blow the bubbles himself. 17. What must be finished by Zman Tefillah? Mishnah Berurah rules that in Siman Pei Tes Sif Hei, you have to complete the Shmoneh Esrei before Sof Zman Tefillah. Not only that, right in Siman Kuf Chav Dalet Sif Koton Zayin, even Chazaras Hashatz has to be finished before Zman Tefillah. So we should always try to do that if possible. However, there were those who say it's enough to start before Zman Tefillah. You can see it in three places. The Eshel Avram Buchach, in the place that we mentioned earlier. The Aruch HaShulchan, in Simen Kuf Yud Sif Hei. Eshel Avram is in Simen Kuf Dalet Sif Vav. And if you really look hard enough, you'll find that the Gaonim said so. 1,000 years ago, they said so. It's enough to begin before, we'll call it Shkia, for Zman Mincha, which is the most common problem. Zman Shachris should be finished by Zman Tefillah also. The two Zman Tefillahs is end of the 4,000, is also Chatzos in a pinch. So it seems to me we should try our very hardest to finish everything, including Chazaras HaShatz, before the Zman. Shas HaTchak Godol, you can rely on the Gaonim as long as you start your Shmoneh Esrei before this end of the Zman. I believe for Chazaras HaShatz, we can be more makel. That's enough to start before the Sof HaZman, as the stringency for Chazaras HaShatz is not so great. And there are a couple of opinions we mentioned before to rely upon that you can start before, even if it ends after. Question number 18. Are Ashkenaz shuls sometimes struggles to find a balkorei? There is a member of our shul that knows how to lane, but only using the Sephardi trump. Is it better to have him lane or have someone else lane who knows the Ashkenaz trump but will struggle with the laning? This is clearly a question of how much he's struggling with the laning. If he'll struggle with the laning and it come out kosher, then you should have the Ashkenazi balkorei. If he's going to struggle with the laning and come out not kosher, much better have the Sephardi lane. Now, what's kosher? Kosher is to say all the words right. If you get the trump wrong, it's not ideal, but discussing here, parceling out to someone from a different Eidah, we wouldn't do that if the Ashkenazi from this Eidah would be able to make a kosher Kriyas HaTorah even if he would not get all the trouble. Question number 19. If someone goes to the hospital before Shabbos for non-life-threatening emergency, like a broken bone or stitches, and is not released until after Shabbos has started, are they allowed to return with all their mukhs and belongings, like their phone, keys, and wallet? B, does it matter if the hospital is outside the Erev? C, what is the ideal way to return, car, taxi, Uber? If the hospital is a 45-minute walk away, do they need to walk or can they drive? Seems to me that in almost all cases of someone who went to the hospital, it's not, even if it's non-life-threatening, it would be in the category of a chole she'ein bo sakana. Not less than that. For chole she'ein bo sakana, everything is mutter to a non-Jew, to a nachri. So mefurish gemara and besach the Shabbos, daf kuf chav tes, and it's found in Shulchan Aruch Arachayim as well. And therefore, do whatever has to be done through a eino Yehudi. How do you do that? If you need your phone, keys, and wallet at home, you ask the Eino Yehudi to pick up your phone, your keys, and your wallet. And once you have my wallet, open my credit card or my phone and Uber. Call an Uber. Uber should get me home. You put in the address. It's taken care of by the Nachri in the hospital. Hopefully you can find someone to do it for you, either a professional, a nurse, or other employee of the hospital, or someone who just wants to do a favor for you, who's not Jewish, who will do this for you. They will take all your muksa items, and if there's no Erev, all your items, put into a bag, call the Uber, and they should walk you out, carry the bag into the Uber, and they should open and close the door, because it's a problem with the light going on for someone who is, for Shabbos has come already. And you should ask the driver, when he takes you home, he should open the door and bring the items into the house. Of course, you have to give him a tip. I think in Uber you can give a tip. I think you can even give a tip from the beginning, I think. And you should give him an extra tip. So listen, I gave you an extra big tip. Please take care of these people and open the door for them and close the door for them and carry things for them. The big tip should work. Must you work 45 minutes? I don't think so. Many poskim say that the rabbinical prohibitions which were waived for Chol HaShem B'Sakana are in the category of what we call in our language Hutra. Avnei Nezer explains why. The Chuya means you have a prohibition, you have to push it aside, only if it's Yev Shalakayim Shneim. You push it aside with a great hesitation. That's true of a Daraisa. But a Derabbanan, why should the rabbi say it's prohibited and we allow it with a dispensation for Cholah, say it's permissible in the first place? The Torah doesn't work that way. The Torah makes absolute prohibitions. But rabbinical prohibitions, the Avnei Nezer, are only introduced originally to work, to be relevant when they're relevant, and when they're not relevant, it's not that it was prohibited and you push it aside, it was never prohibited in the first place. If that's the case, I think it's permissible to ask a guy to drive you home, and you're not required to walk back 45 minutes. If you decide to do so, you have to leave everything in the hospital after Motzei Shabbos. Until Motzei Shabbos. Okay, I'm not stopping you from doing that. I do not believe it is a requirement. Last question, question number 20. Sadly, a Jewish woman has a baby with a non-Jewish man. How is a pidyon haben performed? When mentioning the baby's name, should he be called Ploni ben his mother? His maternal great-grandfather, his maternal grandfather is also not Jewish, or Ben Avraham. So, let me make two corrections to the question before getting to the most important point. Number one, we don't mention any names by a Pidyon HaBen. You can make a Mishna Berach if you want, but the official, if you look on the Art Scroll Siddur, as opposed to a Bris, there's no name mentioned, so therefore the question of how it should be called, it doesn't come up in this context. It comes up in other contexts. So when there's a more formal need, you have to use his mother's name, Mori Baruchel. That's his mother. But not to embarrass him when he gets called up for an aliyah, things of this nature. So then you would put in the male Jewish name, the maternal grandfather, in this case the maternal great-grandfather. You don't want to embarrass this person. So again, it depends on the circumstance. it's an aksuba. She put in his mother's name. And Aliyah, most poskim make, you're going to call him up a Ben Avraham, even though he's Jewish, just to cover up. Or you can call the maternal great-grandfather's name for Aliyah, not to embarrass him. But again, when it comes to the Bris Mila, they give him a name. It all depends who knows what. If everyone knows what happened over here, it's called the mother's name. If people don't know, we don't want to embarrass her, you can call some other name to avoid the embarrassment. That's as far as the name. So, as I said, in the Pidyon HaBen case, there is no name. But the word baby is also a loaded term. If you look in Simon Shin Hei Sif Yud Ches, this din is found, a non-Jewish father, and the Shach Sif Kon Chav Bei, the first word is, if you do the redemption, Ke She Yagdil, when the boy gets to be 13, not baby. Then when he turns 13, he should redeem himself. And therefore the word babies would not apply according to this Shach. However, it's possible that some people disagree with the Shach. How so? If you look in the Shach of Cotton Chof, based upon the Ramah, there are those who are fearful that if you don't do the redemption immediately, he's not going to know about it. He'll go his whole life without a Pidyon HaBen, which would be terrible. So therefore, it's better to do the Pidyon HaBen right now. It turns on the 31st day. You do a Pidyon HaBen because you're afraid he's otherwise going to forget about it for the rest of his life. The Shach Sifkot and Chof says that. Now, the case the Shach is discussing is where the father is alive but decides not to do the Pidyon HaBen. So Bezin will force him. And according to some, instead of doing what the Ramah suggests, the Bezin should leave it till the boy gets older and put a necklace around his neck. Eino padui. The shocks of the necklaces get lost, and it was maybe better for the Bezin to do it immediately. Look in the Gilyan Marsha there, who has a Chiddush Nifla, who's in the Divrei Chamudos, that within 13 years is the equivalent of within 30 days, and it's too early to do the pidyon. But most poskim go, the Shach certainly goes against that. It passes like the majority view. Even according to the Shach, it seems to be a distinction that Bezin will do the pidyon if the father is obligated, but not if there is no father. However, since a tas will not work nowadays, since the Shach writes in Sifkot and Chof, perhaps it's better for Bezin to do the pidyon, even in a case where there is no father, because he may not know about it when he gets bigger. He'll forget about it. That would be preferred in the circumstance according to these poskim. And there are those who disagree, so you cannot do it at all before the boy turns by mitzvah, and those who have an opinion that you should always be done through a Bezin, every case is to be considered on its own merits. Thank you very much.
Rebbe, thank you very much. Bezrat Hashem, we hope we can call upon you later on, in our future. Thank you so very much. Have a good evening.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.